Our forefathers put their trust in you. They trusted, and you delivered them. They cried out to you and were delivered. They trusted in you and were not put to shame. Amen. When I preach, I like to have access to books. Often I will find that I spend far too much time combing through stacks of books, biblical commentaries, theological treatises, pastoral care, literature, you name it, before I've realized that I've jotted down a small mountain of notes on things only tangentially related to what I'm really going to say. I like to over-prepare with my sermons, to have considered all possible angles, all critical scholarship, and to have soaked in all possible information before I feel adequately ready. This week, none of that was possible. As much as I would have liked to have continued in this fashion, my books were all locked away, scattered between houses, in boxes marked and unmarked. At first, I tried to continue in my same way of preparation. I scoured my house and my office and everywhere in between in search of Howard Thurman's Jesus and the Disinherited. I thought it will be perfect for this sermon. I searched high and low, and I couldn't find it. And I was left with only my own stories and my own experiences. And perhaps that's better. What I need to share on this day is my own story. We gather here together in church, and we give acknowledgement to what we call World Homeless Day. I am hoping that what is ostensibly an outreach effort is now a liturgical exercise, that we may personalize needless suffering and injustice that exists right before us. Stories that may seem distant are indeed personal. The irony of this week, though, has not been lost on me. As I have prepared the prayers of the people and a sermon to raise awareness about the realities of housing insecurity, I have also feverishly packed and moved from old house to new. It is a beautiful home, a peaceful bit of land, and a place where I hope for years of joy and raising a family. I've been joyful and I've been proud, but I would be lying if I said that my feelings were not more complex than that. I have also felt a sense of shame that I am moving into a new space while so many that I know struggle to maintain a place at all. Perhaps you have felt a sense of shame too, as we've read today's gospel. It is the single thread that connects Job in the midst of his colossal desolation and the unnamed man in Mark's gospel who we are told is shocked and goes away grieving. Jesus tells him to sell all that he has and give it to the poor, and what does he do? He leaves in shame. It is the thread that connects us in our suffering to those who we might see as entirely different than ourselves, those without a comfortable place to lay their heads, left to walk the earth, and those who we understand to be comfortable. From each of our circumstances, we know shame. I pondered this reality all week. I wrestled with it, and again, the Spirit brought me back to the same story. I once knew a man named Jerry at my previous church. He was deeply involved in our ministry, and yet he continually struggled to stay in good relationship with our church. When he was a young boy, he had been taken from his family. He had endured great abuse to the point where the state was so worried for his safety that he was relocated and his entire extended family was never told where he had gone. As an adult, he ended up unsheltered and in Asheville, where he came to be that beloved member of our church. but his participation was often turbulent. One day, he would be loving and helpful. He was a sound engineering whiz, and when COVID hit, he set up all of our microphones and outdoor worship. Then other days, he would cuss out our clergy and anyone who might look in his direction. My job as associate pastor was often how to negotiate this healthy relationship, and that sometimes meant taking a required break from church. I will vividly remember one such time when I had to do this, only for him to show up on the front lawn with his PA equipment. He took out his microphone and he shouted to anyone on Patton Avenue and in the church, "We got a fakie! We got a fakie here, a fake pastor!" He shouted this out to anyone who might listen. It was so outrageous that I had to chuckle. His performance was an attempt not to harm me, but was his way of demonstrating what he could not articulate. I want to be here so bad. I want to be a part of this community, but I don't know how. I am feeling shame and isolation. Now, last winter, he told me that he'd been contacted by a long-lost aunt over Facebook. The aunt connected him with his brother, who he had not seen or heard from since he was 7 years old. They had been estranged for over 40 years. He talked to his brother on the phone and told me that they were planning to meet here in Asheville for lunch at the home that he had just gotten through Homeward Bound a year earlier. I was a little bit nervous for Jerry to meet his brother. I didn't want him to get hurt. I didn't know what memories this encounter could dredge up, and I wondered whether his brother would be kind to him. And frankly, when he showed me his brother on Facebook, I thought he looked scary. And Jerry was nervous too. He asked me, along with two other coworkers, to join him in the driveway as he would meet his brother. So his brother ran 1 and then 2 hours late. Snow fell rapidly, and we glanced at our watches, wondering if they were coming at all. UNC basketball blasted on the radio as flakes met the ground and melted. And then finally, a car blasts up the driveway and out comes his brother. He was not scary. He was not the imposing person I'd imagined. He was quite small. He and Jerry moved towards one another. They locked eyes and they fell into one another's arms. They bury their heads in one another's shoulders and only come up to bring their heads back and stare deeply into one another's eyes before falling again into one another's embrace. In that moment and that hug, a sense of isolation, of shame, of loss was erased. He was connected. He had community in a brother. There was nothing to be ashamed of. From then on, he was a different person at church, far less likely to blow up, more likely to be in stable community. He knew that he belonged. If the story ended with shame, if our story ended with shame, it would indeed be a sorry story and a sorry faith. But shame is not where God asks us to reside. Yes, Jesus challenges the man who comes to him. Jesus implies to us that we personally and as a society must do much more to bring faith and a just world forth. But that is not where the story ends. The story does not end with the man leaving in shame. Instead, the disciples then ask, "Who can be saved?" Jesus looks at them and says, "For mortals it is impossible, but not for God. For God all things are possible." That is our story. It is not a story where we have come into a world that we must save, but a world where we ourselves are in need of salvation. It is a story where the work has been done through the resurrection of Christ and where we are the recipients of miraculous grace.
Yes, there is work to do, but we are not called to be saviors. We are called to be saved. The good of the world is done not by our own making, but by God's. We are called to be aware. And so on this day, let us be aware in a new way. Let us be aware not only of a new way or a new place to give, but of a new way to be in the world. Let us be aware not merely of the brokenness of some supposed other, but that brokenness which resides in us. Let us break those chains of shame and of isolation through God's greatest tonic, relationship. Let us pledge to work to know one another, to love one another, to be with one another. And let us be mindful on our journey of those wise words of the Apostle Paul. Let us therefore approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Amen.